Northern Colorado never stops. Neither do we. This is NoCo Now, presented by the J9 Agencies. Here's Tanner Schwint.
The information, comments, and links provided on this segment do not constitute legal advice. No attorney-client relationship has been or will be formed by any communications to, from, or with the listener and attorneys. For legal advice, contact an attorney actively practicing in your jurisdiction. Do not send any confidential or privileged information to the attorneys or radio show. Nor shall the attorneys, radio show, or associated employees assume any liability or responsibility for it. Also, no such information, documents, or materials will be returned to you. All liability with respect to actions taken or not taken based on the contents of this segment are hereby expressly disclaimed. Visit the KFK website for the full legal disclaimer.
I think it's just oddly hilarious that we've got Brian Gary voicing that, the good afternoon guy, because if he knows anything, it's about how to get out of trouble, I think, is where we're going. Welcome in to Ask a Lawyer. I'm Tanner Schwint on this Thursday morning. Hope everybody's doing well. Ladies, Havila and Taylor joining us. How are we doing this morning?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm fired up. You ready, Havila?
I'm awesome. Thanks.
You're awesome. All right. That's better than not being awesome.
Well, yeah. Or good.
That is also true. We're talking domestic violence today. Going to be a great conversation here. So we're going to talk to domestic violence to start it off. Taylor, I know that you are very passionate in this area, and this is kind of your area of expertise. So I'm really excited to hear what you have to say today. We're also going to talk about client and attorney relationships coming up in the second segment as well. So we'll get into all of that. So let's just start from the bare bones of it, Taylor. I'm going to kind of just throw it over to you and let's talk about domestic violence. I guess my first question, this is such an intricate area because there are so many complaints about this. And so what technically classifies as domestic violence?
Well, let me start out by saying Havlet equally, if not so more, is, I think, interested in victim rights and domestic violence. But
I just tried to give you a compliment. Come on now. You can take it and run with it.
No? It's hard to take a compliment.
There you go.
There are just so many different things that qualify as domestic violence, especially in Colorado, state by state. I think the biggest thing I try to tell people is Colorado is a mandatory reporting state. So if there is a call regarding domestic violence, even if it is – and domestic violence is very loosely defined as just someone being in an intimate relationship. And so you could – you know, your neighbors could call if they hear you and your significant other in a fight, if the police check up on it and one of you says, oh, yeah, he threw a vase at me or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. The police – are supposed to investigate it, and technically, if they find there has been any sort of domestic violence, one of the parties has to be arrested.
Yeah, and I mean that is – it's such a fine line, right? Because when you talk about – every couple has arguments and things like that. But when that third party gets in, if it gets involved, if you are called in and you're just in a yelling match with your significant other that I know everybody out there can relate to, does that still classify? If both parties – there's a knock on the door, the cops are there, and they're like, no, we were just in an argument. There's been no physical anything like that. Is that still domestic violence?
You're getting into the weeds there because they're so fact-specific. And I will use a case I had a couple years ago as an example. In that instance, the cops – this is the craziest one I've had in the sense of – I don't know what would have happened if we went to trial, but they classified someone throwing a water bottle against the wall, even though it didn't hit the person. Like, so you have, you know, a water bottle,
right.
You throw it as domestic violence. The person who threw it went to jail that night. So
is that more just like on the intimidation of what could transpire after that? Is that that seems interesting, and that seems very minute to me. In that regard, against a wall, it wasn't thrown at the person or anything like that. I didn't know that could be classified as domestic violence.
I'll let Havila, that has the statute book open, answer. Or I guess not answer, but I mean, I think it just depends on the statute, the circumstances, different factors you look at. Technically, the police are – they have a standard set of circumstances they are supposed to look at and factors. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And I just went to a trial on one where they did not. And so that was a big factor at the trial. So there are just so many different things to look at.
Well, and I know you've got it right here in the notes that, that intimidation is a form of domestic violence. So I would imagine that's where that comes in as well. Havila, I mean, I know you've been practicing law and you've had cases like this as well, right? I know it's crazy that a lawyer has been practicing law, but domestic violence, it is such a, it's just a thin line, and there's so many other issues, right? I mean, we get to cover a little bit of it, but these really come down to a case-by-case basis.
Yes, and a lot of my clients who are charged with domestic violence get hung up on the terminology. So most of the time, they come into my office and they go, I don't understand what this domestic violence is. I'm not violent. I didn't place my hands on my wife. I didn't touch my boyfriend. I'm not a violent person. And then that's where the definition comes into play. And when you're talking about using it as a form of coercion or control or intimidation, really, it's a two-part process. Was a crime committed? And then is there an intimate relationship that falls into the one of those two categories, methods of intimidation, control, or coercion? And so explaining that to your client where you go, look, you didn't have to necessarily have hands on and be shaking your significant other for this to be domestic violence. It's more about the context of your relationship with that person.
Yeah, that's interesting. The other one that I found interesting here, Taylor, is economic abuse. I mean, is that just making your significant other not being able to buy things? Is that what that breaks down to?
Yes and no. So the way no one's going, in my opinion, I've never seen someone say, oh, he's withholding money from me, so we're going to arrest them. It comes back to something else. A crime probably has been committed, and domestic violence is the enhancer. And if someone is looking into that case and all of a sudden they see, say, you're married and there's that domestic violence enhancer that would say, okay, you also are not letting her have any credit cards, or you took away all her money and now she can't, you know, pay for her own living. That's kind of
That's a great explanation. But for our listeners who don't practice law every day, what's the difference between a sentencing enhancement and an independent crime?
So a sentencing enhancement is something that gets tacked on to the actual crime. So if you I'll take an example from recently, if you are hitting your significant other's vehicle, allegedly, and that is criminal mischief, that's an actual crime. But if you are in an intimate relationship with that person, it's going to be criminal mischief and the added enhancer of domestic violence, which means there's going to be a protection order on the case, and the person allegedly committing the crime cannot then see that person.
Well, you know, and we've got a question here, and I think it's a good one. And again, if you have questions, text in 888-530-0043, 888-530-0043. I'll have Havila answer this. The question is, when we talk about domestic violence, a lot of times we talk the majority of them are men. I think that's a conception that is out there. Is that factual, or are most domestic violence cases men attacking women?
I don't have the statistics in front of me, but it's pretty clear that the statistics reflect that men are usually the aggressors in a domestic violence situation.
Do men stand less of a chance of winning a case alleging domestic violence against a woman?
Well, that's an interesting question.
And I know it's kind of a loaded question, so I don't mean to throw it at you like that, but it just seems like if the majority of them are women who are the victims of domestic violence, when a man has a case like this, there's a conceived notion that, okay, you're this big, powerful man, that your wife isn't, your significant other isn't doing this. So are those harder to win?
I think that's more expected. I think people expect when they come into a jury room on a domestic violence case, they're going to see a man in that chair. I think it's harder for a jury to understand why a woman might be sitting there. So I don't know that they're necessarily harder to win, because that's kind of the standard quo that we're used to, it would be more of an anomaly to see the female being prosecuted.
Yeah, that's what I think is interesting when it comes to this. It's Ask a Lawyer. If you've got questions, 888-530-0043. I want to talk with you, Taylor, more about this mandatory arrest. And I think this is interesting. You know, somebody's got to go. I mean, if there's a call and they find something like this, if there's a day that goes by and cooler heads prevail, and both parties, you know, say, look, I don't want to press any charges or anything like that, what happens next?
So interestingly, a lot of people think that if they say, oh, I don't want to press charges, that makes a difference. If the cops find a crime has been committed and there's domestic violence and they arrest one of the people and it's up to the police and the district attorney to press those charges. The other person has no really weight in whether those get prosecuted. So if they do decide to prosecute it and there's already been an arrest made, that then you have to wait to go in front of a judge to get that protection order
lifted.
And typically I've never seen it fully where you go to court and you say, okay, we're fine now. And the judge is like, okay. No, the judge is going to most times make you wait and make small changes to that protection order as the case goes on in time to make sure, because it's a safety issue and it's being seen as, okay, if I say, okay, this protection order is gone, you're saying you're fine, goes out the next day and happens again, or most likely something worse. Who is that on? It's on whoever says that's okay.
Well, and I think you touch on where I was going next, and about this is mostly in place, right, Havla, for you know, any effects that coercion or that violence that has been happening, you know, the effects of that on whatever victim is involved, right? Isn't that why these standards are in place?
The reason why there's a mandatory arrest law is because a long time ago, and I don't know the date, a lady was killed in Castle Rock because the police did not arrest the perpetrator of a crime. And the victim said, yeah, please don't arrest them. So there was a lot of discussion around domestic violence victims, and understanding the cycle of violence. Part of the problem that victims have is when they're stuck in that cycle, they're afraid for their safety. And the worst thing that they can do as the victim who's in that cycle is say, please arrest this guy, because that makes the violence worse. So most of them are going to say, please don't arrest him. I don't want to press charges. That takes it out of the victim's hands. And the police can say, look, you have nothing to do with it. The state is pressing charges. And then they get to say the same thing to the person that they arrested, hopefully diffusing some of that aggression that's contained in that relationship.
And
Taylor.
And going back to the economic, domestic violence or economic abuse, a lot of times studies have shown it's not just one form of domestic violence. So by doing that as well, a lot of relationships, whether it's the man or woman, the person who is the abuser is also controlling the finances, or, you know, more than one form of abuse. So by doing this protection order, it also helps the victim say, oh, you can't also just take all the money and run.
No, that makes absolute sense. Got another question here, and I know we're going to talk more about the Gabby Petito case, but after that case, you know, there was a lot of social media talk about, okay, if you are in this situation and you are being abused or are a victim of domestic violence and the cops are there and you don't want to come out and say exactly what you were just talking about, Havla, are there, you guys may not know the answer to this, but are there like codes that they can use when talking to police officers or things like that? When the actual arrest or the actual incident is called in, where they don't have to blatantly come out and say it. Are you guys aware of anything like that?
I'm not aware of anything that they can just say that everybody kind of goes, aha, this is a victim. But there are resources for victims, domestic violence shelters. A lot of those websites have the safe escape button. So if the perpetrator's in the room, you can click the button and it shuts down the browser. But law enforcement is trained to separate all those parties, so that way the victim doesn't have to be worried about the perpetrator and the listening to them, so they can feel safe in that situation. On the flip side of that, though, you know, I think the legislature took a long time crafting this, and it makes a lot of sense for your true victims. Where it gets hard on the defense side is somebody who's figured out the right words to say to get somebody arrested, to use it as a negotiating tool or mm-hmm. leverage. And you see that a lot of times in child custody cases mm-hmm. where the mothers realize, okay, if I say XYZ, I can get him arrested and out of the house. I can file for divorce. And I've got by default sole custody of the kids, and I've got the house, and I've got all the possessions. And so I'm starting off
ahead. You know, yeah.
And so those are the ones that are particularly difficult for people like Taylor and I, who are representing those people who are arrested, and they're going, I didn't do anything, right?
Yeah, no, that's a difficult situation, one that I certainly don't envy at all. Taylor, I know that you want to, the Gabby Petito case was, it caught everybody's attention. It was one that we followed closely here on this show as well. There was a lot of debate about if the police did the right thing with that initial call after separating them and things like that. So I kind of want to just kind of leave it up to you here and talk about that Gabby Petito case, because ultimately, obviously, it ended in a very, very tragic way. But what were your thoughts on the Petito case?
I mean, watching, if you've watched the video of, you know, the police interviewing them, and like Havila said, you know, they're trained to separate them. So even if there were these, you know, signals as the person sent in, a lot of the victims, and I think Gabby Petito, in my just opinion, was one of them, where it's a cycle of violence, and she wouldn't have said, oh, here's the signal. She is a victim, and her brain is trained to say, oh, no, everything's fine. And so I saw that, at least in that video, when she's crying, no, it's me, placing blame on herself rather than on him. And that's, an actual classic victim.
Yeah, very dangerous situation, very, very serious issues with domestic violence. Any final thoughts from either of you when it comes to domestic violence, that you may be a part of?
Well, they're complicated cases. So if you're charged with domestic violence, certainly reach out to myself or Taylor.
All right.
And don't talk to the cops.
Never talk to the cops.
There it is. That's the motto of this segment. Don't talk to the cops. All right, 10:22. When we come back, a little bit on a lighter note, we're going to talk about client-attorney relationships. Yeah, that's right. I always wonder what that's like. We'll discuss next. It's NOCO Now, presented by the J9 Agencies on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFK.
The Good Afternoon Guy with Brian Gary, weekday afternoons at 3 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back in, NOCO Now on a Thursday morning. It's supposed to get into the 20s today. That's cause for celebration. Hi, I'm Tanner Schwint. I'm joined by Taylor Myers with TaylorMade Legal Services and Havila with Bruno Lilly Legal, as Havila plays on her phone over there. Welcome back in. Got a text here, a question for you guys. It's a very vague question, and I'm going to throw it to Havila here so she can try and answer this. I get brownie points for that, Taylor, that I didn't ask you this. Can a minor defend him or herself in a court of law? I asked in what context and was replied with, be his or her own lawyer. Can they represent themselves in the court of law?
No, not really. They're going to go through a whole process with the magistrate or the judge before they get to the point where they're able to, quote unquote, represent themselves. They have to do everything with a parent. If the child is really going that way, where they're like, I don't want a lawyer, the court will probably appoint a guardian ad litem, which is like another way of appointing a lawyer that's different than a defense attorney or a public defender.
So there you go. There you go, Texter. Yeah, they cannot be his or her own lawyer in there. I'm sure there's cases. I don't know. That's a very vague question, but I appreciate you answering that. All right, I want to talk about client and attorney relationships because let's be honest, you guys probably don't deal with the most upright citizens every single day. Maybe some of them are innocent. That's for you guys to prove or not to prove. What are those relationships like?
Wait, we never have to prove innocence. Let's just be real clear.
Yeah,
That is our in the Constitution.
Okay,
you do
that's
not.
True.
You are presumed innocent until proven guilty.
That's what I get for throwing all that shade at you so far today, huh?
Yeah.
You're going to throw me out of the bus there.
Yeah.
Quit clapping, Ryan. Ryan Kelly sits back there and loves this.
You know, I was only on my phone looking up George Carlin's 7 words you shouldn't say on the radio. But
there's a dumb button. You just can't go on for longer than 7 seconds.
All right.
But then I'm going to have some words with you afterwards. Let's talk about client-attorney relationships. Are they cordial for the most part? Are they all over the place? What's it like?
It really depends. You get all sorts of clients from all different walks of life. I think there's an initial phase with every attorney-client relationship where there's sort of the trust building phase where your client's trying to make sure that you actually know what you're talking about and that they can trust whatever is going on in their life in your hands. And after that, then there's usually a phase where you're going to have some disagreements and have to
hash those out.
Yeah, you got to figure that out. And then hopefully by the end, there's the phase where they go, okay, I didn't really think that you were going to walk me through this path correctly, but we made it out on the other side and we're okay.
Is there a lot of yelling that goes on in these, Taylor?
Not on mine. There's a lot of stern stern talks. Towards the end, at the beginning, I guess in the initial consult, I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this, but it's like almost like a therapist. Like you go in for that initial consult, and I tell people, if we don't have that connection or you don't feel like you can trust me and vice versa, then I'm probably not the attorney for you, because it's like any other kind of relationship. I mean, there are so many different kinds of lawyers with so many different types of personalities and tactics. The people who like me are probably or may not be the same people who like Havila, and there's just all different kinds of personalities.
Well, and the emotions are certainly high at the beginning of all these, right?
Usually. And I'll just say that I get yelled at a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
You just have to realize that that person's probably under a tremendous amount of stress. And so I think I'm one of the fewer lawyers that will take more of the yelling and try to refocus it. I know some lawyers just will not put up with that. They'll put their foot down immediately. But I think you kind of have to play it out. I'm not inviting people to come to my office and yell at me, by the way.
I thought that's exactly what it was. And by the way, I believe both of you guys are giving free consultations. So if you want to yell at them, there you go. Just kidding. Don't do that.
I have had people call me up and before even getting to the consultation phase is yelling at me about their case. And I'm like, I don't understand why I'm getting yelled at right now.
Well, and I don't know why you'd want to bite the hand that feeds you. I mean, your guys' job is to, not prove their innocence, but get them off the hook one way or the other, right? Because apparently you don't have to prove innocence.
Right. No, and I haven't had – if someone yells at me in the first consult, that's when I'm like, okay, this is typically
this is not a
free consult, not a match. But I have had clients where have that very long bonded relationship, especially not in criminal cases, but family cases even – even after the divorce, there's child custody that continues on and on and on, and just being very, very upset with me. And by then, if I have that relationship with them, I feel comfortable usually saying, okay, you need to, like, take a break or whatever. How I know that person, just let them.
There's a lot of, you got to have honest and true conversations at the beginning of life. Was this something, was the client-attorney relationship something that caught you a little bit off guard when you guys first got into the law firm?
For me, yes, because I spent all of my internship years and then a number of my years right out of law school in the prosecutor's office. So you're not having the same type of relationship with people. It took me a little bit to figure out kind of how to navigate that relationship with my clients.
Now you got really thick skin.
I always had thick skin.
Is that right? And they just added on to it from there. I don't know. I just think it's fascinating what those relationships are like. And I know you were joking earlier. This is the best hour of your week because you don't get yelled at.
Right. And in that context, I don't get yelled at by my clients. I don't get yelled at by the judge. I don't get yelled at by the prosecutor. I don't get yelled at by victims. I mean, like, I get yelled at a lot in my everyday life.
Well, she mentioned, Havila mentioned this earlier. I want to know your thoughts on it. If you do have a client that's like that, that's down your throat on some of these issues, and then all of a sudden you do come out on the other side and you win, how sweet is that to not only go like, you know, screw you, and you get the win?
It feels really good.
Yeah. I would imagine that's going to be a high that you cherish.
It's a high that you cherish. I don't know that I've ever come around and said, screw you.
Well, right.
Maybe thinking it as I'm drinking some wine that night.
You got the win. That's all that matters.
The conversation after the fact is really like, see, I told you it would be okay. Now go home and relax.
Yeah. Well, it's just got to be a sigh of relief from everybody. All right, ladies. Well, thank you very much for the insight today. A lot of good information, a really fun conversation. Taylor, where can people get a hold of you?
TaylorMade Legal Services, and it's TAILOR made, so .com.
All right, check it out there. There's also a link on the podcast. Havila, how about you?
BrunoLilyLegal.com, and you can call me at 720-340-1373.
And you guys are both giving free consultations, right? I didn't just misrepresent that.
Let me clarify. 30-minute.
30-minute. All right. Yeah. All right. You got to put that disclaimer in. See, that's just the fine print, Taylor. They'll find that out later. That's what advertising is all about.
Yes, and we're open 24/7 and speak Spanish.
There you go. All right, guys, thank you so much. Go back and listen to the podcast. If you didn't hear the first segment, it's on 1310kfk.com, as well as links to both of these websites. You can get it on 1310kfk.com. Thank you guys both so much for today. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, we'll talk with you next week. Let's get to the bottom of the hour news and weather center.
For the latest on the Broncos, the Nuggets, and the Rockies, listen to The Hull Show, weekdays at noon on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
We roll on here, Noco Now, on a Thursday morning. Thanks for being with us. Very excited about our next interview coming up in about 4 minutes. We're going to have Chandler Jacobs with the CSU men's basketball team. What a night he had last night as the Rams take care of the Cowboys on their home court. Moby Madness was in full effect. Listening to the post-game show last night when Chandler was talking, it was incredible. He's such an honest dude, talking about where he knows they're at, how they're going, and where they're going to be. It was an awesome experience, and I was watching. I mean, 18 points, 7 boards for Chandler last night. I was watching him in the warmups, and I mean, he couldn't miss. I'm like, this guy might have a big night, and he certainly did. And he finally found that shooting touch. He was 4 of 8 from 3-point land, whenever the Rams needed a bucket, he was the one that they turned to get the job done, and they did. And they got it done last night, 61-55 over Wyoming in front of a sold-out Moby Arena. Just an incredible experience for not only the fans, but the players as well. It was all around just an awesome, awesome night. So we'll talk with Chandler Jacobs coming up next here on NOCO Now, presented by the J9 Agencies. You're not going to want to miss this interview. We'll be right back.
Everything you need to know about Northern Colorado is on NOCO Now. Weekdays at 9 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
By far the best college basketball atmosphere I've ever been a part of, and I was just there as a fan trying to contribute my part to what was an incredible night for the CSU Rams last night as they win against Wyoming. They take care of the Border War. And a big reason that they were able to do that was because of Chandler Jacobs last night, 18 points, 7 boards, and he was the playmaker when they needed it. Joining us now up on the line, it is Chandler Jacobs. Chandler, I want to ask first, my man, what did you think about that atmosphere last night? Moby Madness was in full effect.
Yeah, that was crazy. We came out for warm-ups, and we just saw all the white shirts and the student section and the sides filling up already. It was absolutely ridiculous. I was very nervous coming into it, but the crowd was just so much on our side and just so much rooting for us. It was easy to kind of get into the flow of the game.
Man, I was watching you in the warm-ups, and you couldn't miss a shot in warm-ups. I looked at Brady. I'm like, this guy's going to have a big night, and you went out and did it, man.
Yeah, I yesterday after practice and then early to, the day before the game, after practice and before the game, I just got a great warm-up in. Like, with Coach Ali, I couldn't miss, and it was the work isn't paying off, the extra work after practice lately.
No, it's showing. I mean, 4 from 8 from the three-point line, you got your shooting touch there. Does that confidence just build and you know the next one's going in too?
Yeah, definitely. After I subbed in quickly, I think maybe the first possession I was in the game, I hit a three because they closed out short, and I knocked it down. And then I think maybe a couple positions later, I hit the pull-up on EK. And after that, I was like, all right, I'm good. Like, the work is showing. Just let it flow off your fingers and let the game come to you.
Is there a part of your mind, you see how great David Roddy is night in and night out. Is there a part of your mind that you're like, okay, let me be the running mate tonight. Let's go get this thing done.
Honestly, man, I'll be very honest with you. Like, with the game, lately, especially last night, I just let the game come to me. You know, I didn't even realize, you know, how much I was scoring or how much I was kind of being Robin to Rod's Batman. But honestly, I just wanted to let the game come to me, take what they gave me. I knew coming into the game that they were going to play off like they did the first time we played them, and I just wanted to attack whatever shots I got and just knock them down.
Well, you know, Chandler, it looked like you maybe banged up your shoulder a little bit halfway through. I saw you reach up and grab it. Well, your ability to play through that, man, I was like, okay, let's not have him have any issues after this. And you just kept rolling, man. You're a tough player.
Appreciate you, man. At that point, I was guarding Maldonado. This is late second half, and he kind of got my shoulder really good. So after that, I was feeling it, but my adrenaline was going, and I wanted to win that game so badly. I wasn't going to let that pain stop me at that moment by any means.
Well, what impresses me too, man, is your guys' defensive effort between EK and Maldonado. They went 5 for 19. That's got to feel really good.
Yeah, that was amazing because I think coming into the game, we knew we didn't want them to beat us again, you know, because EK didn't have a great game last game, but us on the perimeter, we didn't guard Maldonado very well. So coming into the game, we wanted to pressure up on him and just kind of take him out of the game, whether it be mentally, physically, or just emotionally, just really get into his head and get underneath his skin a little bit. So we wanted to negate some of that aggression early. And we obviously accomplished that, you know, holding to 4 points, I believe. And that was huge, you know, because their team goes as far as they go. So being able to slow them down is essential.
Talking with CSU star player Chandler Jacobs here right now. There was a moment in that game where there was a questionable charge call, and Coach Medved got a little bit fired up. He gets the technical. Yeah. What did that change the momentum? Did that get you guys locked back in?
Yeah, I think so. I think whenever, because, you know, Medved's always getting on the refs, and just the energy and the passion that he brings to our team and his commitment to us as individuals as well as, like, in the midst of the game, it's hard to not want to play hard for a guy like that, you know, and to lay it all on the line for him. So I know for me personally, I'm such a big fan of his. I'm so appreciative of the way he supported me and cared for me in my journey here. So it definitely inspired me.
Well, that journey has been, it's been a very long and interesting one, man. How sweet is it now to be here in Fort Collins? You guys are still playing for the Mountain West regular season championship. What does that mean to you?
It means the world to me, man. You know, like you said, my journey was a long one. It was very different. You know, it's not the typical journey for most guys at this level. But it's one that I was very appreciative of, and it's given me a lot of perspective on life. And to be where I'm at now, I feel like I'm living a dream because I'm in the place I want to be in terms of, like, position-wise, but I didn't sacrifice the people that I'm with. So I'm still with top-tier people, top-tier community, while also being able to live my dreams out as a college basketball player.
How much do you hear of the outside media, you know, saying, you know, the Rams are a great team, but they can be an elite team depending on how Chandler Jacobs plays? Do you hear that stuff? Do you take that as motivation?
Oh, yeah, I've been hearing that since even when Ali was recruiting. You know, he told me, you know, we're a great team, but, you know, the versatility and things that you can bring can really increase our ceiling. So I've been hearing that since I was being recruited by Ali way back in last April or March, whenever I decommitted from Texas Tech. But, you know, I think for me, I take it. I hold it with great honor. You know, I think that to be able, whenever I made the decision to leave, I wanted to go somewhere where I wasn't just another guy on the team. I wanted to go somewhere where I could have impact, and like whether I played well or not would matter in terms of the outcome of the game. So that's a beautiful thing to me. That's something I really enjoy about the game of basketball. And honestly, I love it. I hear it. I see it on Twitter all the time. You know, I'm active on Twitter, so I always see it. And I just think it's the coolest thing in the world, man. I feel so blessed.
Now, yeah, you're an incredible basketball player. There's no doubt about it. Mentally speaking here, Chandler, when you go from, you know, being in the starting lineup, then back to the bench, how does that affect you?
Honestly, I honestly prefer coming off the bench. I think at this point, you know, because whenever I start, obviously I know I'm good enough to start and all those kinds of things. It's not a matter of talent or ability, but when I start, I put a lot of pressure on myself to like not have any drop off with the starters, because the starters are, you know, guys that have been here for 3-4 years. So I'm like, I'm the new guy. And I feel like the new guy, so I'm trying to remember everything. I'm trying to, you know, hold on to all the information. But when I come off the bench, I can play free. And I'm not necessarily worried about, you know, remembering plays or trying to do too much. I'm very much able to just be in my role and excel at that. So whether that's coming off the bench or starting, I don't care. You know, I want to help the team win, but coming off the bench is not a big deal for me at all.
Well, and it seems like you got a team full of guys that are willing to fill those roles.
1,000%.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. We're talking with Chandler Jacobs here with the CSU Rams. So, Chandler, I know you guys have been on just an absolute grind here. Has it been nice, man, to have a couple of days off where you can relax for just a minute?
Yeah, man, I cannot wait. You know, I think that, you know, these past three weeks or so have been a grind, but they've been great because we've played great opponents and we've had some great wins. We've obviously had a tough loss to UNLV, but it's been so cool because I think it's shown us so much as a team, more about ourselves than we knew beforehand. So it's really tested our mental and tested our strength as a unit. But I think also on this back end, looking ahead to next week, you know, after this Utah State game on Saturday, we're off to next Saturday, you know, or the following Saturday. And we only have one game against Boise. And while other teams are trying to scramble to get the last regular season games in, we can kind of sit back and focus on one more game for the week. So I'm super excited.
Now, and you guys are getting set up for a Mountain West Conference tournament as well. Yeah. Now I did hear you say last night in the postgame that you're a big numbers guy. Are you looking at the potential matchups that you guys could have in the Mountain West tournament?
I've tried to. I'm like I said before, I'm an analytics guy. I'm a numbers guy. So I've tried to configure them and tried to make some predictions. But I think it's one of those things where it's still like San Diego State still has to make up 4 or 5 games, you know, and so many teams still have to make up games. So it's kind of hard to get a guess or a prediction from me. But I think the things I've been looking at mostly is just the net, the NCAA net, what our resume looks like, quad 1, quad 2 wins, and trying to determine our chances at least an at-large bid.
Now, there's been a lot of talk, Chandler, about people who you guys want to see in the first round, not in the first round, UNLV specifically. Is that a matchup you shy away from, or are you ready to play anybody at any moment?
No, we're ready to play anybody at any moment. You know, our goal is to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. So at that point, like, you can't be afraid to play anybody. So we're not afraid to play anybody. Obviously, UNLV has gotten us twice this year, and they've had our number a little bit. But in each year, each game, you know, it's presented different challenges. But I think that at this point, you know, it's too late in the season. It's too late for our playing careers in general to be afraid of playing against anybody. So, you know, whoever we get put in front of, we'll take care of it, and we'll do what we can.
Well, you're awesome. I want to say thanks as a fan for putting on that performance last night. That is a memory I'll never forget, and that place has a ton of people that feel that same way. So hell of a game from you, hell of a performance, and good luck to you the rest of the way, Chandler. I really appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you, too.
All right, thanks. That's Chandler Jacobs there, stud basketball player for CSU. What a guy. I mean, going from his journey to ending here in CSU, and selfishly, and I'm not the only Rams fan that is this selfish about it, I wish he had a couple more years. I wish we didn't only get to see him play 1 year as a Ram, but he's certainly going to make the most of it, and he already is. The Rams go as Chandler Jacobs go. You know Stevens is going to do his thing. You know Roddy's going to do his thing. Who's that next guy? And really, we're watching Chandler Jacobs take that role, and the progression from him from the beginning of the season towards to now it is just incredible. Incredible. What a great night. What a great atmosphere last night for the Rams. They're firmly in this thing. They got a shot to win the Mountain West League Championship, the regular season, and I'm really excited to see what they do when they do get into March Madness. And I think they're going to make some noise. Elite Eight, I'm calling it right now. When I fill out the brackets for the whole show March Madness Bracket Challenge, CSU will be in my Elite Eight at the minimum. They've just got the talent to go do it. So, again, thanks to Chandler Jacobs for jumping on. Thanks to everybody for tuning in today. Here's how the rest of the day looks and lines up here on KFKA. You got Clark and the Coach coming up 11 to noon. So you'll hear some preps talk. I know University Girls head coach will be on as well, talking about a big win over Eaton last night. Then the Rich Eisen Show from 12 to 2. Brady Hole is off today. The Good Afternoon Guy with Brian Gary, 3 to 5. I'll be back from 5 to 5:30 for a special edition of the College Basketball Tip-Off Show with Kevin Lytle and Chris Abshar with the Coloradoan. And then at 5:30, pregame starts for UNC and Eastern Washington. Jerry Schimmel will be on the call with Tip starting at 6 o'clock. For Ryan Kelly, I'm Tanner Schwint. This has been NoCo Now. We'll be back at it tomorrow. Movie trivia coming your way on a Feel Good Friday. We'll have all of that in store for you and much, much more right here on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFK. We'll talk to you tomorrow.